and the intent is beautiful. But instead, what we're doing is promoting that situation by making the state and the church in a subordinate and superior position.
So you see this as putting the camel's nose under the tent?
Partially. I also see it as separating the sheep from the goats, in the sense that if someone is operating a Christian school and it's more of a private school than a ministry of the church, maybe they don't feel like they don't have a leg to stand on going to court. We personally do. And personally, I cannot, as Minister of Education, file these reports, even though they are not that bad reports. But it's back to the First Amendment at issue as
so you,
well.
So you see as a matter of your conscience or the tenets of your faith that you would perhaps test this constitutionally before complying?
I am in a rather unique position. I have a child who next year will be a first grade student. And I know next year I'm going to pick the school, which happens to be our school, and that child will be going there, my son will be going there, because I know the quality of it, and not because it's on the exempt list or it files support reports and all that. And then it will be down to the thing, if the way I understand the law, I will not be in compliance with compulsory school. My child won't be really attending because he isn't meeting the different options they give you here. And I have no other choice than that. And yet, as a parent, I would be glad to file reports showing that my child is being educated, because that's my responsibility as a citizen.
Well, I guess to clarify, then your school, the chances are your school would not comply and would be in court on the First Amendment separation of church and state, saying that you couldn't make reports to the government on the educational component of your educational ministry.
We can't, because in my mind, how do I separate that? If we've said, and convictionally we've stood, and we've missed paychecks, my wife and I both teach there, and there have been months where we haven't made too good of money because the gifts haven't been in. And we turn around and we talk that all the time, and then we turn around and answer to the state on that, and then they come around with some other regulation saying, okay, in the question of some other report, that this church is to apply on or supply information concerning a ministry. And we say, no, we can't do that because that's a ministry. When you start breaking out your ministries of a church, where do you stop? And we're not in this for profit. We're in this because biblically, the parents have the responsibility to educate that child. And then biblically, it does say that the parent can delegate that responsibility to tutors or governors as the father appoints. And so biblically, we have no other choice than going this route. We can't stand on anything else.
I have a question that's a little off the subject, maybe, but as a school, you are exempt from paying the sales tax in the borough. Right? In the area that I come from, to do that, you have to fill out forms to the local municipality to qualify. So what you're saying is that okay for you to do, or where do you draw the line? I'm trying to figure where you draw the line.
Well, right now we're totally relooking at incorporation and all that. Because we were entangled in the past doesn't mean that we can, you know, when the Lord brings it up and shows that, hey, this is wrong, that doesn't mean you have to go keep going simply because you have been entangled. And there are some changes that I think churches are going to have to look at, and we are presently looking at as a church. As far as the thing of the tax issue, offhand, some people would say that's a subsidy. Offhand, I would say that it's back to the same issue we're having with IRS. How can you give your money that's tithes, that's given to the function and the operation of the church by people who have been paying their taxes, and turn around and pay in other taxes? And yet, I think every last one of us has a real burden to be as good as citizens as we can possibly be. And we want to be, and we want to file reports. We want to do our duty as parents. But we can't do that when it conflicts with what we feel is our conviction of subordinating our church to the state.
Association and seen if you could work something out?
I talked last year. I called a couple times this year. Mr. Carney was down here earlier this year, and I think it's just a matter of they're feeling that politically is that this is the best they can get. And I can't, and I think a large part of it, in fact, I know a large part of it is because they're operating out of fear. We have a law right now that's on the books that says DOE is in charge of all regular, you know, education. And, you know, I can't operate out of fear. I can't operate of what might happen. I can just operate on what I know and how I have to stand. And the thing bad about it is I see Christian schools going into court fighting a law that they helped put together. And they're sitting them cooking their own goose, and then they're going to have the burden, show the burden that these, all these things are too encumbersome and too entangling. And I have a problem with that. The law that's on there presently, I didn't have anything to do with. And I don't think it'll stand, and I think that's one reason why DOE has held off over the years. They see that it is totally untenable position for them.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what does happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Bob Cooksey for NEA Alaska. Bob.
Lobbying and kind of get the bind at times, and this is one of the times I feel I'm really between a rock and a hard place, because the prime sponsor of the bill currently is a key figure in the future and a major piece of legislation we have going.
That wouldn't have any bearing.
Good. Now, I think she's certainly capable of being open-minded, and I appreciate that. However, would like to express some concerns about the bill. In the first place, I'd like to say I do fully believe in protecting your right and freedom of religion. However, when it comes to education, I feel that it is another matter, and that there is a state obligation in that matter. I feel that the bill itself there is suggesting conflict in that first we recognize the state's legitimate interest in the quality of education, and in the meantime, we're providing exemptions which we're encouraging private education. I'm not sure I understand how we can say on the one hand that we believe strongly that we can provide and we should provide legislation and regulation regarding fire and sanitation, physical exams, immunizations, and so forth. On the other hand, we're not dealing with educational component.
I think the problem is that based on the Attorney General's opinion, and I didn't vote for the bill last year because of this pre-elementary school issue, not because of the constitutional argument. We got ourselves into a situation where we can't get there. I mean, ideally, for me, ideally at least, we would carve out a bill that has narrow exemptions to provide or protect the idea of separating church and state and apply only to sectarian-based schools and leave the DOE in its former position to all the church-related schools. But the Department of Law's decision leaves us in a posture where we can't do that, which means that we either have to keep the status quo, which is probably not going to happen politically, or expand the exemption to non-sectarian private schools. I think that's the dilemma.
Right, yeah. I'm glad that you folks have to find a solution to that problem rather than me. But in pursuing it, I would like to mention a couple, some of the other things that we note in this proposal, at least. It appears on page 2, at least of the committee sub, the judiciary sub, line 22, that we're suggesting dropping the private pre-elementary, even if they're not religious.
I'm sorry.
So we're suggesting dropping control over the private pre-elementary, even if they're not religious, which I assume means that I could start my own private program and be exempt. And then on page 3, line 3, further emphasizes that nothing in this paragraph authorizes DOE to require religious. And then further, or other private schools to be licensed. So it seems that it should at least have some minimal standard there. The current law allows DOE, in cooperation with the administrator of the private schools, to work out to promulgate regulations. This bill would remove that, of course, and I think that's the purpose of the bill. The question, how far we're going with the educational component that way. Apparently, we do believe in the state control or supervision of religious schools, because on page 5, line 8, it appears that if the religious schools don't choose to go with this exemption, then they are under the other regulations requirements. We feel that the provision on page 5, line 21 and further, about reporting to the public schools is good. For one thing, it can help the public schools in planning in terms of the number of teachers or the other things they need for schools. If you know roughly how many kids would be going to the private schools. Page 6, line 4, we speak to a number of specific requirements. Say, on the one hand, we believe in separation of church and state, but we will require attendance reports. We'll require operation on a regular schedule. We'll require a minimum number of days. We'll require an annual report regarding enrollment in each grade. We'll require the reporting on the school calendar, but we're still not dealing with the educational component. And a good, for instance, there, say minimal requirements for teacher training. And you know, we might all agree that there are some problems with teacher training, but at least we have some minimal requirements there. And one that continually comes to my mind is some kind of training regarding working with kids. When you have kids in an educational setting for a long period of time.
One of the church groups last year said that its practice was that interested members of the congregation could come forward and go through a church training program. I don't remember how long. You would oppose allowing that? Does EA oppose allowing that? Would you require that they have, you know, teacher education majors or so many hours of education training in college or university?
Rather than answer the question that way, I could say that I believe in the states having the authority to say what the minimal set of teacher training guidelines should be, what the minimal requirements should be. And if that's handled through some other means than state college, I don't know that I have any problem with that. But somehow the state should be able to say teachers in this program have met minimal standards.
I agree with you on some of this and with the preceding witness. I think that, quite frankly, both in matters of principle, as a matter of principle and in practical terms, the Christian schools that are proposing this bill may find that they have abdicated a ground of principle that will haunt them in the future. But that's their choice. I mean, it's not their choice if we say no, but it's their choice as a citizen group to seek it out.
Well, additionally, in terms of the testing, we're requiring the testing. Now, on the one hand, we require the testing, but we allow the chief administrator to determine which test. But something that may be more important, and again, even to those folks, we're requiring it in four areas. And looking especially from legislative at the state level, you may find those areas more limited than you really need to know what's happening with kids. And I'm thinking right now, especially in terms of some of our congressional interest in, say, the science training field in our schools. We're also requiring them to maintain test records. They must make those available to the parent, must be available to the Department of Ed. There must be permanent student records. And I guess the thing I find interesting is that we're comfortable in placing those requirements on the private schools. On the other hand, we say we can't deal with the educational component because separation of church and state. And maybe I'm going further than the real intent of the legislation here. Lastly, in the definition, I find an interesting implication, and that is that some schools operated by church or religious organization do get state or federal monies. And maybe that's true. I don't know the facts of it, but that's what occurred to me when I got to that piece.
Okay. Any questions?
Thank you, Mike.
Senator Fink is the sponsor. Did you wish to say anything to the committee?
Are you down with all your other testimony?
Yes.
Thank you. Jan Fakes, representing South Anchorage in the State Senate. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for not only allowing me to speak, but for sitting through all this various testimony. Just briefly, for an update of the committee, some of you may or may not know this. When the governor vetoed the bill last year, he stated that there's no need for this legislation because no regulations will be promulgated against these people. 28 days later, the series of regulations that caused 800 people to come out at East Anchorage High School in Anchorage the previous year began to be promulgated again. So this horrified everyone because the governor of the state is saying, no need for the legislation, don't worry, folks. 28 days later, here they are. Okay. This was compromise legislation worked out. It started on November 16th of this year, of this past year, with the governor, the commissioner of DOE, the attorney general, and several people in his office representing both the private schools, religious schools, and his special assistants. At that time, the attorney general was given the lead on the bill because it was primarily his considerations of the due process equal protection clause that got the bill vetoed. So the attorney general was given the lead on the bill. During the month of December and the first week of January, numerous hours of negotiation occurred between a representative of the attorney general's office, who kept calling the DOE his client, and the attorney general's office and the religious school people, the private school people, and several legislators. This bill is the product of those negotiations. It's not perfect on either side. The Department of Education could come in here and testify to you about all the things they lost in the bill and all the things that they would have liked to have seen in the bill in which they gave up in the harmony of compromise. And I think you've seen here that the religious school folks would love the parents to do it. But think of the heartache, the headache in paperwork with all these little slips of paper coming in from all these parents on whether their child attended school or not. And the DOE said, just give us that. Give us one attendance sheet. Give us a sheet of paper that's taken every day anyway with the list of children on it, and we'll be happy, just so that we know they're attending a school. Will you do that for us? And I think in the effort of compromise, the religious school folks said, okay, we do it anyway. We will send in that piece of paper. It's probably the main thing the Department of Education got survived from this bill. And I would think that they would have every right in the world, if that got changed at this point, to recommend to the governor that the good faith compromise was broken and that the bill would be vetoed. That's my personal opinion. I think that I would commend the Department of Education in working long and hard with us and the Attorney General's office to come up with a compromise that everybody could live with. The worry over pre-elementary, I really think the bill addresses those concerns of health safety. I don't think it matters if a child is with a teacher who needs a time test, whether they're with them 4 hours or 8 hours, the child is still going to be exposed to TB if the TB is there. So I think I would hope that all those teachers have time tests to begin with, and I would bet that they do. But I don't think it's fair to say that certain things should occur 4 hours versus 8 hours. I think safety standards are safety standards, and if my child was with them for 1 hour, I would want those same health safety, fire marshal codes, sanitation codes, et cetera, to be into effect. The bill apparently is up on the House floor tomorrow. The House has called a special session to hear the bill tomorrow. There is a bit of a race going on, and it appears that the House probably won that race. But I would hope that the committee would pass the bill out anyway, and we'll go from there. And I will gladly answer any questions.
Senator Fisher, Jan, those who represent religious schools essentially went along with this sort of division of sort of educational component from the essentially preschool daycare type facility. My understanding is that the difference is not type test or anything like that, because supposedly everyone gets that anyway. But the difference being sort of the role of the state in regulating. And the question that remains in my mind is whether we've drawn a clear line over the, sort of the edge of the tent is up and somebody else, and I don't have money in these religious schools, but some private entrepreneur may come in and say, well, I'm not operating a daycare center, which is subject to all sorts of regulations. I'm operating a pre-elementary school here. My thought is simply drawing a line there and making very clear that what we're talking in this bill is the pre-elementary facility.
Okay, I wouldn't have any trouble with the definition if it weren't based on hours. I think that's irrelevant. I don't think it makes sense to base it on hours. But let me tell you something. The daycare center gets state funds. The parents get state funds up to $265 a month for their child. And the daycare also gets capital money and teacher salary money. So they double dip in a way, if you want. The private entrepreneur would get none of that unless he was under those daycare regulations. So if a guy can make it out there as a pre-elementary school without any church affiliation or without any subsidies from the government, gosh, more power to him. He must be having a heck of a program. And I don't know if we'd want any more regulation than that. In other words, I don't think he can make it. If you didn't have that endowment from the church and the ties coming in and all of that, you just, on a practical sense, you can't make it. Because the amount of money you would charge, you'd have parents in there daily wondering what in the world you were doing. And I think all of the worries and fears just wouldn't occur because they couldn't open their door. And if they did open their door, they'd probably have a heck of a program for the kind of tuition they'd have to charge to operate.
Excuse me, but let's go back to that, because if I'm correct, the bill defines religious school to mean a private school operated by a church or other religious organization that does not receive direct state or federal funding. Mm-hmm. But the pre-elementary school covered by this bill or with entitled to the exemption is not necessarily a religious school. In other words, if I'm correct, a pre-elementary school could receive public money and be a pre-elementary school for the purposes of this bill if it is not a religious school.
No, that is not correct, and that's not the intent.
Tell me
only those schools that receive no direct direct state or federal money in both the private sector or the religious sector would be exempt, if they choose to be. Now, I need to tell you, the Catholic schools will not choose to be exempt because they are opposed to the testing situation, so they'd rather be under the state situation.
Well, wait a minute. I understand what the intent is, but I'm just wondering.
I think it's pretty clear because the DOE, the attorneys for the AG, stressed that, and they tried to be very careful about that, Senator Josephson. It was an issue in the negotiation process. It was something that Rick Robinson brought up. It's too bad he's not here for this hearing.
Well, but the Department of Education will have authority to exercise general supervision over public pre-elementary schools. And then it says pre-elementary schools in this paragraph mean schools for children ages 3 through 5 years when the school's primary function is educational.
Which is the definition that Senator Fisher was looking at, which I think takes Mrs. Clark's concerns.
What I'm saying is that there is no definition of a pre-elementary school where state or federal aid is the fulcrum or test.
Yeah, it's implied in that section, Senator. It is. It's a part of that section, and it just redefines pre-elementary for the person, for that element in the negotiation process that wanted pre-elementary defined. So it is within that section, and it's just further defined to give a safeguard.
I'm saying, I understand what you're saying, Senator, but I'm saying that as an attorney, I'm not saying this is an opinion anybody's paying me for, because I haven't read it that carefully, and I just landed back in Alaska today. But what I'm saying is that the only place where federal, and I think this is clear, the only place where federal or state money is brought into the legislation is in the definition of religious school. It never is brought in the definition of a pre-elementary school so that a pre-elementary facility could operate, if that's correct, and I understand what your intent was, and the Attorney General's intent, but if that's correct, then the position Senator Fisher hypothecated of an individual saying, I now run a pre-elementary school, and I'm entitled to these waivers, could be asserted even if the daycare subsidies were received.
Now, I'm confident that we've taken care of that, Senator Justice, and it was discussed, that language was put in there to reinforce that concept. It's not the intent of the legislation. It was never the intent of the legislation, so I feel comfortable that it's in there.
Ms. Chair, yeah, I've seen too many bills where, you know, the intent is there. Everybody sits around the table and they all agree, but along comes the bureaucracy afterward, or along comes the shyster, and the intent is violated. It just seems to me that if the House is acting tomorrow, the House bill comes over, we do have a couple more days, and I sure feel like we're comfortable if we had this issue clearly resolved. Why not?
Because there was an agreement reached that the bill would be passed out today to the best of the chairman's ability.
Well, there was an agreement that we have the hearing today. We tried to move
that. That was not my understanding.
Ms. Chairman.
Well, that's fine. Just a minute.
There may be an agreement with the chairman, but as a member, I was never asked. I don't know if the other members were involved in any even understanding.
No, let me be very specific. We agreed to accommodate this schedule, to take this matter up today. We have done that. We've been diligent about it. We want the bill in good shape. We are not trying to delay the bill. And did I not, Senator Fisher, suggest that to accommodate Senator Fakes, we consider a special meeting tomorrow? Did I not do that?
That's right.
I want you to know that.
That was not my understanding, Senator Josephson, in your office last week prior to you leaving. And if that's...
My understanding was expressed, in fact, in writing to Senator Petula, so...
That's just fine. If that's the way it's going
to
be.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want us to end up with ill feelings here. I'm expressing a genuine concern. I'm not trying to stall anything. As I don't know if you were here, I was discussing it with someone else. I intend, as everyone else, to see this bill move. And at this point, I just don't want my rights as an individual member of the committee sort of abrogated because there was some discussion between the respective chairman last week.
Your rights have not been abrogated, and Senator Fake's rights have not been abrogated, and I do not know how I could have handled this in any better manner or fairer manner. And if the committee's ready to take up amendments now, we'll take them up today. I am not asking for delays.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. The House has moved the bill to the Rules Committee. It has been scheduled for House floor action.
They don't move the bills to the Rules Committee. That's not what they do. The bill moved out of the House HES Committee today. They called a special session tomorrow to take up the presidential primary bill. They will read the bill across, and then it's on their calendar. It's scheduled for their calendar already. They do not make a referral to the Rules Committee. So they skipped that section, which is a different timing process, a little bit more efficient than we do. But they did skip that process, and they say they don't have to do it. So the bill will not be read across and given to rules tomorrow. It will go. The HES committee report will be given, and the bill is on the floor.
Not on the floor tomorrow.
On the floor tomorrow for a vote. It's on their calendar posted.
The reason I got a question is, if the House bill comes over, the question is where this bill intercepts that bill. If, in fact, this bill is gone to finance from this committee, and then the House bill comes over, will the House bill only be referred to the Finance Committee?
We have a fiscal note with zero fiscal note.
Incidentally, it was never referred to.
Incidentally, the earlier committee had no fiscal note, which they should have had. We have a fiscal note, which is a zero fiscal note.
Can I like to remind the committee, the bill only had, because it was heard last year and because we had extensive hearings last year, the bill was only given one referral. And to accommodate Senator Josephson, the HES committee referral was second. Normally you would have had the bill first, judiciary would have had the bill second, and then it would have moved. So the bill only received one referral so that it could be expedited.
The point is that if we're going to get another shot at a House bill or a Senate bill either way, then as far as I'm concerned, I guess we'll go ahead and move the bill on its way. But if it means that a House bill coming over will not be referred to this committee, if this committee sends this bill on unamended, that's my question.
If
the House bill gets here first and will be referred to this committee, then I just want to go ahead and move this bill on its way.
My assumption is that it's a president's prerogative. If the House bill comes over and the same bill has already been heard by this committee, he can just send
it's also the chairman's prerogative.
That's true. I'm really more concerned about the substance of the bill. I think the issue that Senator Halford raised earlier, and I think very legitimate concern was expressed by several people in Senator Fakes about what that kind of, any change in your direction might just beget a veto for the bill. On the other hand, if we have a day or two, this issue could be resolved by discussing with the commissioner and with the AG and the governor, and maybe get their concurrence in an amendment that would essentially veto-proof that section. I don't know. But.
Well, as I understand what you said, Senator, or what earlier witnesses said, they said that they would prefer to have the approach taken by, recommended by Senator Halford, if there could be an agreement made with the administration that would not create a veto situation. If that's true, I don't know when the opportunity for that would be. I'm perfectly willing to cooperate to see that happens. The other issue that I raised, I think, is a correct issue. I think it's an important issue and should be corrected either on the floor or here, or else, if it's not necessary to be corrected, if I'm incorrect, that would be reassuring to know where it is, insofar as definitions of private schools that do not receive money, because I don't see it anywhere. What's the pleasure of the committee?
I don't have any problem, Mr. Chairman, with the bill. Quite frankly, the way it is, and the issue that you talked about, Senator Halford, I think people testifying said that's not going to break one way or the other. So I put that down as a kind of a low priority in the sense of trying to fool with that and have a possible governor's veto. I just assume, I would hope that the chairman, if the House bill got here first, which it seems like it will, that you would request other presidents to have that here.
I haven't seen that
circumstance. So I would move the bill out.
Yeah, let's move the bill.
Yeah, move the bill out.
Let's move the bill out, so long as we get the House bill.
Are you moved to move the bill? Any objections? If not, the bill will be reported.